Zach Welton, object in number seven. Probably the most important pieces of legislation that we are putting through. And so for you to be here with us, even if it is for a short while due to your other engagement, we'd like to thank you. Of course, we welcome the Chief Director who's kept us on the straight and narrow for so long, Mr. Jeff Dormal, and the stable advisors, Idenson, the Advocate Bader Merva, the Rockwoodshire, and all the people. I see here there's also and you've got Advocate Stridham, and so forth. I think they are the politicians that outnumber the advocates, but at this meeting. We're also happy to see a full membership on the back row. Members, we come towards the end of the co-op piece of legislation. We'd like to, with your permission, get a quality quickly and before you use adoption of the agenda to swing around the co-op with a start of the first part of it, because the minister would like to be here during that and he has another engagement. So first of all, the apologies, Mr. Herman. Very much, Mr. Hill Lewis, Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Mabata. I must apologise to you, I got caught up in another meeting, so I couldn't pop down. The deliberations on and consideration of the Co-op's Amendment Bill. So that everyone is aware, the Chair of Chairs has sent me, along with I'm sure a few other chairpersons, a letter indicating there will be no opportunity to extend the deadline, and that if necessary, we will meet at night to pass the co-op bill. The consideration will take place and be out of this committee on the 1st. So that is 18 to seat. So I just want members to keep that in mind. Can we now immediately move to the co-op to remind members, we really only have two or three issues that we were having to deal with. Do you recall that chairperson of the subcommittee, Honourable Mabata? You will remember one was so-called the minority schools. Do you remember what was the other one, the other two?
Well, the other one was the placing of the principal. I think critically it is also two. And the placing of the principals will take minimal time here. So those are the two issues. But when you do start, I will want to say a word or two because
it's
our last
conversation.
All
right.
Had our last subcommittee meeting today. So what I intend to do is just to thank at this level the members of the task team that have worked so hard all the time. And let me start with the advocates, Advocate Small, Advocate Freedom, Advocate Bader Merwe, Advocate Idenson, and also Angelis. Thank you very much. Then to the Chief Director, Dumont, Mr. Rapoho. Then the members, Honorable Silau, Honorable Kwang, Honorable Member E. Lewis, to say thanks for the job well done. And the Secretariat, of course, Mr. Herman and Margot. And we now officially really hand over the task that we have been given over to the PC so that it now gets out of our heads. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks, colleagues. And thanks, I believe I'm speaking on behalf of the team, having given us the opportunity to be in this task team. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Honourable Obasa, for serving the committee, Parliament, and the country so well by chairing and leading the subcommittee of health. Thank you very much. We will come back to that at the end. Can we now look to yourself, Honourable Member, I mean, Advocate Member, please, thank you. Will you be, as our parliamentary legal advisor, lead that team there?
Thank you, Chairman. I think one of the major contentious issues still is the inclusion of minority protection. And in that regard, I said Ivan has indicated to me that you might have a proposal that could bring the two camps together. So if I may, over there, we put it up on the screen. So if he makes word changes, I'll try and give them that amendment and immediately.
In document F3,
it is on page 16, going over to page 17 in document F3.
Thank you. The draft provision that the committee is now looking at on screen and on those pages referred by Advocate Mandanova was my preliminary draft suggestion for a clause to protect the position of minority and individual members and directors of cooperatives whose legal rights or interests have been infringed or who have been treated in a way which is objectively sufficiently oppressive and discriminatory and unfair to warrant legal intervention. Now, I understand the concerns surrounding this clause, and I understand that this clause, which comes from the Companies Act, might not be quite suitable for the flavor and philosophy underlying the cooperative concept. I have some suggestions for narrowing this provision, which I'm hoping will accommodate everybody's concerns. I think we can narrow it in a number of ways. At the moment, it refers to any situation where a member or director's legal rights or interests have been infringed or ignored. We can narrow that by saying, let the clause only apply where there's been an infringement of legal rights. That already narrows it substantially. We can go further. We can then say it should only apply when there's been an infringement of a member or director's legal rights in terms of either the cooperative's constitution or the provisions of the Act. That narrows it even further. Then you are not really doing anything more than stating the existing legal position, because the law already automatically will give such a member whose legal rights under the Constitution or the Act have been infringed a legal remedy. But what the law will do still, which is slightly different from the ordinary legal position, it will give the tribunal the right to adjudicate those kinds of claims and grant relief. So that would be the only change that the clause would be making to the existing law, to confer upon a tribunal, in addition to a court, the power to determine these matters and grant relief, which I think is significant, because your average individual member cannot afford to go to court. I personally could not afford to brief myself to go to court. The costs are exorbitant. So the clause then becomes very closely aligned, I think, to the chief director's position. The only difference is that it would give the tribunal a right to grant relief where there has been an infringement in addition to a court. And then, if that is all the clause is doing, we can deal with it under the provisions relating to the functions of the tribunal. Now, if you look on page 85 of your document, there is a new clause to go into the Act, section 91M. If you look at little A, right at the top on page 85, it says that the third function of the tribunal will be adjudicate in relation to any application made in terms of this Act and make an appropriate order in respect to the probably covers, on a generous interpretation, claims for infringements of constitutional and statutory rights, but we can make it clearer by pumping up and tightening that provision, and that will certainly accommodate my concern for the position of the individual member or director who cannot afford to go to court, but whose legal rights, as set out in the Constitution of the Cooperative, or as set out in the Act, have been infringed. And I think that that is as close as I can get to a compromise position. Thank you.
Now, thank you for that clarification, but also the revision of the earlier proposal. Now, I'm looking at Mr. Jeff and Dormore, the Chief Director, and I know both of you must have been at subcommittees before, am I right? I know. Pardon, who was? But Mr. Jeff and Dormore, you were, and I'm sure you were able to confer and consult within that, were you not? I know you were. Okay, were you not at the subcommittee this morning?
with your approval, Chair. We were late there because there was some miscommunication. I think we are stuck here, thinking the meeting would be here, and then we discover later that it is in the other portion. There was just some miscommunication.
Well, not to worry. Let us look at the committee members first. Those who may wish to comment, I have my own comment on it. It's Honourable Madam Liver.
But are we looking, excuse me, Chair, through you, are we looking at the corrective
I thought you were inviting us to comment. Oh, yes. I move from the premise or from the information of the previous discussions that we had, where the principles of cooperatives themselves and where the establishment of the tribunal. And also the fact that there's the minister, there's the deputy minister, you know, there's all this infrastructure. But also that I think unless it is critically important, we should not find ourselves moving outside the international practices. You know, and then we find we have unintended consequences. The more simple the bill, the better. So for that reason, I would think we and besides, the clause minority clause in itself in our South African development from where we come from. You know, it already raises, you know, it instead of uniting cooperatives, it will tend to divide cooperatives. So I tend to think we should just not have this clause, that we don't need it, you know, that the lessness of the cooperative.
Can I just clarify that you're agreeing on the deletion, we have no problem, we all agree on the deletion of 16 and 17. I'm not sure I understand just the second part. Are you saying that the proposal now to capture a sentence which just makes the reference to the Constitution and the principles on page 85 under A would also go under? No, I'm just trying to say, I understand one deletion. We all agree, am I right? No one's objecting to that. We are, we concur. So it's the next proposal, which was, but can we just reinforce the consumer tribunal? And I want, what I was going to suggest is we hear what it is, you know, we see it, before taking a final position on that. And then, so I want to just leave that for a moment. And come back to what you raised at the beginning, Honourable Mabasa, and that was, now, are the principles secure in the position that they are in? Which would appear now to have been part of the preamble, they've been removed from that, and they've come straight under definitions, as I understand it, under definitions on page 5. So they are an intrinsic part or an integral part of the, you know, the piece of legislation taken very seriously. I'm looking at our state law advisor. Now, it's always helpful to get a nod, you know, you're more secure. So, okay. All right. Honourable Vandermeer.
Sorry, you covered one of the points I wished to raise, which was, I think we should wait to see what we get. But I wanted to make... No, we didn't finish yet.
We're not going to go back to that one just yet.
Because I wanted to ask, in the deletion, what are we deleting, number 8 or page 16 as well? Because that's been raised, and I think maybe that can be retained. And the second point I wanted to make is, the principle that I think we need to discuss is something that occurred to me when there was debate here in the last meeting, which I disagreed with everybody. And that is, I think this is important because precisely of the fact that there has been traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chief, quite a lot of conflict. In fact, one of the key reasons for the failure of cooperatives is between members of the cooperative, and that is what we want to prevent, or we want to allow for a mechanism to deal with conflict among members. So I think we have to keep that in mind, because I think, as you said, you didn't think this clause would ever be used, the original one, you know, or you said it might not be used. I have a sense that this is something that might well be used, which is why we don't want it written in the way that it was, in that very legalistic kind of minority rights thing. But I do think that through the tribunal, and that's why I'm pleased, firstly, that it's in the page 85, we need to cross a way in which, But the principle I wanted to say is that what we're trying to do is reduce conflict amongst members by giving them the opportunity resolved by a body. Thanks.
Well, I'm here from other members here in this area. The idea is to bring back clause 8 on page 16. Okay. I'm saying that's what will be proposed by yourself, Lee. Page 17, we still had, as I understood it, the deletion there of 9. You've got, you know, page 17. Can we just hear just on one or two other members, and then we can move. Okay. I'm going to take in turn on Macintosh on Old Salah.
Madam Chair, I have not been on the subcommittee, and I'm not an expert. but I do understand a little bit of human nature, and I want to identify very strongly with Honourable there is going to be conflict in these co-ops, and it can be of any variety. It can be personality, it could be tribal, it could be local, and I think we've got to create easy, inexpensive mechanisms to resolve conflict. And so, in a sense, on your own member, this is what I'd like to say, but I don't want to go into any more detail.
Thank you, Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Salam.
So I think we have come to a point now where we no longer talking the language of minority.
Yes, that's awesome.
We are now at the point where we're talking the rights of members. Firstly. And secondly, there are two issues around this that we deal with. The right of members. Secondly, to activate the tribunal in rights of both members in terms of the constitution of the cooperative or the state, that members must be able to take into such matters for the tribunal to consider. I think the key to this is whether the department is comfortable with that particular right of the tribunal to handle those particular matters, more especially that they are now qualified. Which right you are talking about? The right of the members in terms of the constitution of the cooperative and in terms of this act. And it doesn't refer to other rights, which might be, as it was before, it was talking to personal rights.
Yeah. Thank you. Did you want to make any comment on the local law?
Yes, Mr. Indon. To also aid the House, also congratulate the CDM here on the letter of the amendment now that has been provided, of the new one that has been provided. It's excellent, Chairperson, from the point of view that, first, it doesn't elevate minority rights as a title, because which sends a very wrong, signal a very wrong communication to South Africa that there is this special court for minority rights, minority court. Okay. Therefore, the other aspect is that the collective nature now of cooperatives is now emphasized by the entire act itself. And therefore, what it does is that, in fact, it's sort of saying, where there's been very clear violation of the act itself and the constitution of the cooperatives, therefore, this particular tribunal must act, and which is something that is what the tribunal was created in the first place. Only thing is that it's new, they just that it's now specified member or director, which of course that could be the case. Members send your letters there as well as it's in the ministry. Very good. Thank you.
I think we've pressed this out long enough. JP Minister, do you want to make any comments in this regard before we close it?
Nothing,
Chairman,
and the committee members and William team. I think for me it's quite clear that I think there's a shift now in terms of moving away from the narrative, which has a big problem because I think, as I said, 90% of cooperatives don't, like, people always say those smaller places and all these things, and they don't have cooperatives now. When you're going against the spirit of cooperatives in any way, the constitution would be doing the individualistic approach, collectiveness is what is really the key issue. So I think the element looks it covers that spirit that we're trying to say people need to practice and really be in a cooperative mood. So to me I think it's quite good and the future type of way.
Right. I'll read it on the screen myself that we'll ask
by any member or director of the cooperative
It's a direct link to tribunal there, which is the intention that where there are matters that can't be resolved within the co-op, just the consumer opportunity to deal with. So we are all at one with this particular court thing. I think the second matter then with regard to the principles is a risk. It is part of the, an integral part of the act. Is no longer part of the preamble. And I can just check with yourself, Advocate Vandenova, it would seem as if those were the outstanding issues, but if there's something I have overlooked, please raise it.
Operational sectoral tertiary co-offices. I think that's just correct there.
national level. You'll recall there was a problem with the wording. Why does this national level mean? What does national mean? So we have that operate on a national level, and in part, multi-sectoral tertiary co-ops that operate on a provincial, district, or local level indicates it's a national agency cooperative. So we announced that there, and then the next aspect was, you will also recall there were two providers that did not read well. So we simply added the two new subsections. 1A, for purposes of protection and in relation to cooperative operational, and yes, we did apply it, means that cooperative and child is annual general meeting, and the district annual returns to the registrar in July financial year, and B, an operational technical cooperative may join the national identity cooperative, where there is no sectoral or multi-sectoral technical cooperative that can represent the secondary cooperative. So that's simply to make provision for situations where you don't have a tertiary to intervene between the national. So that aspect was fully discussed by the committee. So I'm simply going to move on. The next one is on page 20, going over to 21. And this is where we're talking about the pre-incorporation contract. So what we have here is we simply added a few aspects to the pre-incorporation contract. Subsection 5 indicates where the contract is in. I think that 5, 6, and 7 have been discussed before. The addition is number 8. That we also discussed, but we have now added it here. Where if operators receive written notification of the existence of pre-incorporation contract and does not expressly ratify or reject the pre-incorporation contract or waiver resolution within 3 months of the date of the written notification, the cooperative will be deemed to have ratified that contract. That is just to prevent that limbo situation, so that is where that clause came in. The next aspect is at the end of 1 of 5.22, going over to 23, and this is where we talk about the name of ATIC, where ATIC appears in the name. So what is added in ATIC is simply that only the national ATIC offices may use the word ATIC.
Yeah.
And then there was a request in 9 that the registrar, because they have currently tertiary co-ops that have ATIC in their name, that has changed. But also we don't want to put the burden on the co-operative to do it, but it has happened, so we said it was automatically done. So that is a matter of ANZIC. So it's twisted into 2, so it's quite clear what is happening here. In ANZIC, those names will automatically be graded by the registrar. So if they don't go forward and print, still print their business cards and their email, etc., there will be notification. So we added the paragraph B, notify intersected, this is what the registrar must do, notify intersected cooperatives in writing within 6 days of the length of the cooperative amendment at 25 of the amendment, so effective. So it will be automatic, but they will be notified. The next read this is on page 20. What we have here is, I think that was simply a grammatical correction, just adding that must be a provision which indicates whether the sentence didn't read well. So it's not so much a big issue that was discussed. I'm taking through, and may I ask just from the outside in the line, if you guys cross the red bit that I'm skipping, if you can just come. The next one is on page 40, and this is the topic of English school. So what happened here was that we were told that we had an outside stand where there's a transaction of the operative, and then in all other instances there must be disclosure and there must be something from the office. So, what we have here is that something in subsection 2, which is the section that deals with admission being sought, a director or employee of the office may not use their position or any information obtained while acting in their capacity as director or employee. 2, now what do you know? Just to catch something else that came up last week, was what do they know about a contract that might come up? What was this, or any information obtained? So, it's a target there. To do what? To gain any commission, remuneration, reward, or other advantage for themselves or for any person other than the operative, unless they have disclosed full particulars of the nature and extent of commission, remuneration, reward, or other advantage.
charges and if opportunity to implement approval to such activity by the director may lie the first thing, as the case may be. I switched them around in my mind. Number one is the permission to sought, and then subject two is the outright ban. Where we have, notwithstanding subsection one, a director or employee of a cooperative may not, in any circumstances, use this position in information obtained, and against information obtained will cover those future things while acting in their capacity as director or employee to gain any commission, remuneration, reward, or other advantage for themselves or for any person outside the cooperative through or in connection with any transaction to which the cooperative is part. Now, they outside standing, low commission, and loss. And then, if a director or employee convenes subsection 1 or 2, they will be guilty of the offence. And we have confirmed section 8, this is the section that we are changing, is covered by the general sanction section. So there is provision made for offence. So we are back. We will not have a second offence for offence yet.
Liable
to such sanctions as is contained in the winding up of a tribunal. So we just say that it may be wound up voluntarily by an interpretation of 1A, order of court, or an order of tribunal. This time I'm not quite sure what was necessarily being changed. I don't think the registrar. We took out the registrar. And then I think the next change will also be related to the registrar being taken out. I know there were a couple of issues, instances rather, where the registrar was taken out. So, on 63, you will notice 64, 65, all the
confidential things that you have
we will definitely double check to make sure of that. The next one is on 82.
If I may, Chair.
Yes, I will make a
talk. On the confidential stuff and thing, I'm sure the Chief Director and his team will do it, but I find when you're working on a bill and in detail, and I haven't been working on this one, but I have worked on that, it's very helpful that you sit down quietly and just read the whole bill. Because sometimes you don't see the wood for the trees. You're so busy concentrating on the little detail that you need to, when you've basically got it all, as it were, panel beaten, stand back and look at the shiny motor car and take time to read the whole bill from front to end. And you'll sometimes, you know, come across stuff which you just somehow miss. Thank you.
Amazing. I think some cars are designed that the fact that they change the design of the car, that's the off. The next is on page 82, 91M, and this is where we deal with the prospective terms and so on. So, we've corrected the wording here so that we read the minimum must act. Appointed person and chief person of the tribunal may be appointed for a second consecutive term, appoint no more than 10 other persons as full-time or part-time members of the tribunal who may be appointed for a second consecutive term after consultation with the chief person. And then the next change that has been made was on the next page, 84.
Now, just before you get to that, there were two things about that. The word, you know, the consecutive principle came up, and so on. And then the other one on you coming to the term, so that we've got the overlap.
Okay, please. That is on page 84, subsection 7. So we have the consecutive term, wow, which is added, and in subsection 7, which now we, and there was a little bit of a grammar issue as well, because it's trying to correct that. The term of office of the chairperson and members of the tribunal must be no longer than 5 years. Provided that should a term be renewed as provided for in paragraph 1A and B, the minister, A, may determine differing terms of service for members, none of which may be longer than 5 years, and the minister must ensure that appointments are made in such a manner that sufficient provision is made for succession within the tribunal. So I think that addresses the aspect that came up last week.
There was the issue of a ceiling of 10.
Okay.
So I don't think it's I don't think it's well captured by seven. Meaning, can you appoint this person if he has completed 10 years? Because we saw it that there must be a ceiling of when you could then be able to be changed completely, even though in the conservative period that is allowable 5-5. But there must be a period at a particular 10 years where we get a new person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
job, was that taken account of?
We saw this cut job. In fact, I'm very glad you brought it up because I think that was one of the outstanding issues that we've overlooked. Because the question that came up was, do we allow two consecutive terms and then maybe a break for 5 years and then you may do again? Or is it 10 years maximum? Or is it, I think that the decision was that consecutive is there. We want continuity, so that's definitely there. But I cannot recall a final decision on whether there could be a break of 5 years and then another appointment. So maybe, I think that is an issue that has to be discussed.
Yeah, look, there was a lot of discussion, but it was just so confusing to begin with the consecutive terms and not getting an understanding on that. But although we raised this, there wasn't a decision. That was the issue. But there was a position put forward here. We don't want people there traditionally. So that's like a broad statement. So how do we cross, Honourable Kajewi?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that we cannot have such a selfish one in this moment. I think that the person has said 10 years. The person has said 10 years must really go. I think that there must be that cap which must be put in place. Because we don't want to face systems here. Because the person can come after 10 years and then wait for 5 years to come back. We cannot do that.
What about the Italian option?
They want to come there.
Yes,
Mr.
President, if I may just be the charity, that I'm a bit quality on clause B, 7B, that the minister must ensure that appointments are made in such a manner that sufficient provisions are made. Is it not closing off if there's a pendulum who might come in? I fully agree with the continuity and other things, but what if the pendulum was, it's like just closing off any other possibility of any other person that might also be good. I'm not necessarily within the tribunal at the time. Maybe from the what? From the act or from the whatever, then the person is suitable, I mean, to be appointed, but because of this succession, so that it must be received, then it means that person can be appointed.
Now, it is a point that we need to take account, but this is somewhat honourable, McIntosh has to say. Thank you, Minister.
Just a clarity, I'm saying what our
intention.
But I'm just looking at the issue as like really, I mean, history, I mean, to the statement.
No, look, I think there was, that was not the intention, but it was wise that you raised it because we hadn't really thought of permanent grooming, you know, the way one does see in some cases when you groom your younger son or something. Yes, Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I think institutional memory is very important. Having somebody, I'm not saying necessarily as a chairperson, but certainly as a member of a tribunal who's been there for 15 years, provided it's a person who's obviously making a contribution, I think it, I mean, I have sympathy with what the FMS is saying. One doesn't want to simply say, well, it's 10 years and finished. And, you know, maybe because I'm possibly the oldest member in this room, I'm conscious of the fact that actually quite a lot of old people around who still know quite a lot and they can make a contribution. And I think, you know, I just am cautious of saying, well, on the tribunal, can only spend 10 years vision club. I think you could have it, although I do think the chairperson there could be a restriction on having a chairperson for more than 10 years.
If I understand the Deputy Minister, she was really referring to the succession principle. You know, wasn't referring, yours is a separate matter, you might think. But that there could arise a situation in an environment where you may, for one reason or another, both positive and negative, bring someone external in to do this. And therefore, how does this fit with the succession principle? That
the minister's concerns be accommodated by rewording B along the lines, the minister must, when making appointments, have regard to the benefits of the professional visitor tribunal.
Have regard
to the benefits of the professional visitor tribunal. That would encourage the minister to be mindful of the benefits and the advantages of securing succession, but not close off the possibility of appointing somebody else where desirable.
Okay, so we've got that as an alternative from our expert to mouth over for the moment. I mean, the principle is we do want the minister to have the opportunity, if necessary, to bring someone from outside, so to speak. We do want to add that. And that must be clear, that it is an available option. Yes, I advocate Amanda Miller.
Thank you, let's just give an explanation what we meant with succession. The succession was not, as I think it has been interpreted, and maybe because someone from the outside interpreted it, because that gathers another view on matters. With succession, what is intended is that there must be a staggering of appointments. That is all that is intended. So it does not block someone new coming in. Okay? But we can maybe revert it, and I've heard what our experts say. So I've sort of taken a quick draft there to say, I've taken into account, I've changed succession to continuity, because that's actually what we want. Uh-huh. It's not so much that we want someone to be groomed to take over. Yeah. That's not my intention. We want continuity. We want a man to be able to groom the next group of members that come in. So that you don't perhaps like 50% of the tribunal will become new members, and 50% will be the old, and they can tell them how things work. And then they go out, and that means those other 50% members must include a new one, and so on. So they must take into account the need for continuity when appointments are made, so that the term of office of all members of the tribunal are not terminated at the same time. So that is exactly what we need. We don't want the whole tribunal to stop, and then have new members. But I've not put it there, but again, I think the same old puzzle will just maybe tweak it a little bit. This is now a quick first draft that I've put down.
I think there's still matters of principle, though, at stake. So let me just hear what the Deputy Minister is saying, and then I will come across.
Just a little follow-up on what the advocate is saying. My experience with the 18 years being in Parliament, the 19th year, these things are good if you say them in the Senate. But can you implement them? How we amend laws from time to time? Because the unintended consequences kick in. It's good the way you interpret now, but things doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
Just take 071, the SAE board. If we had this clause, that minister could not have done away with all the doors. All of them were not capable. SAE is running to a loss. It means money paid out from government time to time. But if this was part of that particular clause, that minister forced to retain people that are not even working. That's my experience, not in theory, practically, since I've served for 19 years here. This might be good intention put in here, but come to practice, it doesn't work the same way. So once you put such clauses, I mean, you are just helping, to stay with people that are not delivering the services to the people because of this type of clauses.
Yeah.
I'm not against the succession, I agree, even Parliament, to have 50% new members and 40 members, it does have an impact that you must have a continuously running parliament. But you must have a way of exactly staggering, putting the members learn from others, and then you have a parliament that is running full, or even the committee working. I think to me, just the concern I have with such clauses that we then make whoever is a minister really not be able to move. It's a good intention. But with experience and of saying, so like, we keep on amending legislation that's right, already with this law. Put it. Yes, I agree with you with some of the comments, but put it in such a way that it doesn't force that minister to explain you or hey, not them to deal away with this board members or the tribunal and council. Not one of them are
Let me hear what members are saying, because we do understand what is at issue here. And I saw three hands up. First, Honourable Labasa, Honourable Salah, Honourable James. Let's start off. Right.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I think the the suggestion made by the Deputy Minister, I would suggest that it be looked at as a separate issue altogether, so that the clause as it stands, I would think it's okay as it stands, because it addresses only one aspect. It addresses only the staggering. But it does not speak to whether the minister can dissolve the board or can, you know, that, so that aspect, I would propose we look at it as a new issue, and then I propose we retain this one as is. Thanks, colleague.
And one proposal and comment,
Honourable Salah. Please say the moment.
Chairperson, I actually agree. The question of underperformance of board members is a different thing altogether to the question of succession. So the point is taken. What is very important in any event, as you volunteer, Deputy Minister, is that the principles of governance in fact protects the board against unnecessary ministerial interference as well. And so therefore, because executive action has to be constrained by a proper rule. And so, and what this does, in fact, is set down the rules for continuity, and I think that's quite right. And that the question of the underperformance of a board and the circumstances under which the minister may act is a separate question altogether.
What can the minister do to Well, there's a difference between intervention and interference. When something is not working and you turn it around, that's not interference, that's intervention. But when something is working and you come and stop it from working, that's interference. So normally opposition takes intervention and interference as meaning one and same thing. And that's not what I think the Honorable Doctor intends to say when he talks to interference.
All right. Well, as I say, I think we need to separate the two issues, you know, and this particular issue is purely the succession one, so to speak. I must make that clear. I think we've heard from members now. Let's hear what's coming forth from the advocates. Do you want to comment before the advocates vote? Yes.
Something on that. Look at other legislation and maybe just
draw from that example. I can think of two or three pieces of international wording that make mention of that. So I think we can just use that same wording and put it here. If something works there, I can't see why it won't work here.
Well, what I want to suggest is we don't spend the time now. We allow the advocate, the expert, to craft something that we're made aware of, and we don't capture what we'd like. And we also then can make the, because the earlier subcommittee, the department would be made aware of that as well, so they could make, you know, their own input. So that remembering we want to finalise things on Friday to some degree. Deputy Minister, just the last point there.
Yes, that's still under appointment, not the removal. And I mean, maybe the example of what I said was in the one that you said. But it's just the tribunal that is functional on it. And the special appointee, it is the case, not necessarily the removal. It should be within the context of appointment. That one chapter negotiates appointment. I'm not sure whether it's the special appointee or the removal. But to me, it must be within the appointment. Because this is the clause that is under appointment. The minister must try to ensure continuity and succession, da 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 da. So it should be seen the appointment is not the removal of the non-performance.
Well, I think the if, because you're quite right, the non-performance, et cetera, is covered elsewhere to some degree. But let us note, our principle is very clear. Very clear. We're looking at not closing the door, but we also wish to retain the principle of continuity. So we need to balance both as we look on to, in terms of the appointment of someone. And is it going to be that easy for the minister to bring someone in external from the actual human tribunal? That's really what needs to be addressed. I don't want the label to point out. You know, the same way we mulled over minority and after a couple of days away, let's come back and take a position on something. Let us, you know what do they say, it's time, a bit of time, absorption and mulling and so on. Let us come back on that. But of course that does mean that I know you're really crafty as I talk, thank you, Advocate Van der Merwe. So we'll get it pretty soon, I'm hoping. Can we move quickly? We have, on the point of getting to the end members of the co-op. Yes, thank you.
So that was the last thing to
can we all get now, where does the
take up that is the important issue? Now, let's get to our program.
Today, of course, is the 24th.
No, but I just want to look it up here.
And then we go to the 25th, which is the 3 days, so to speak, and then Friday. We still don't have it on Friday. Then we get to take the next number, the 23rd.
We're going to formally start looking at the Cooperative Amendment Bill as redrafted by the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, National Assembly, after consideration of the Cooperative Amendment Bill, B17-2012, and Cooperative Second Amendment Bill, B18-2012, which has been given to you as F3 and is noted at the bottom as B17-B2012. That is what we're going through now. We're all on board. Can you just raise your hand now, you know, when there's something. Don't let's go. Now we look at page 1, or page 2 rather, which is a preamble to some extent, what the purpose is of the book, page 2, carried over to page 3. Now look around all the time. Amendment of Section 1 Act 14 of 2005. We then look at the name of the bill, A. I just want to check with Advocate Andamova, what is green here? Is green because?
It is not discussed by the committee. It has been accepted. So the reason is for green. Just to indicate that this is different from the review.
All right. We're going to, at the end of each clause, clause 1, I will ask if we can move it. All right? Yes, Mr. Dormo.
It's a person we have taken on board the placing of the principles of cooperative within the definition. And I think it would be wise if we have it captured by that first statement there to see that was also there and get also integrated.
You're talking about the preamble there.
Yeah, the preamble, captured in the preamble there, that other aspect of the principles, all those 7 principles that we've defined very clearly.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Compliance. Mm-hmm.
You hear what the Chief Director is requesting? Yes, we've moved it to the definition. Right, that's where it's going to be. But just in the preamble, because that is the purpose, etc., could we not have just one sentence indicating that? I don't think it's, you know, a huge legal matter, constitutional issue or anything. Right, clause 1, A, B,
Madam Chair, I'm a little confused by the green B. We've just in A got rid of an advisory board and it's now called a council. And then it says in B, by the insertion after the definition of advisory board of the following definition. I don't understand it's in green, because to me green means the status quo, so the advisory board's gone. It's a council. So that's the market that clarity on that. Thanks.
When you deal with an amendment bill, you must always read it against the principal act. So our principal act is the cooperative act. And if you hold that act next to your bill and you compare, whatever you put in your bill as being amended must reflect the current wording of the act. So it's simply a drafting principle. Yes, we are changing to council, and if you consolidate the two into one document, it will read council. But from a legislative drafting point of view, we still use the word as it is currently in the act.
Are we all clear? Yes. That's got the green light. Yes, we're all very clear.
I would like to just point out something to the committee. It's more from a drafting perspective. I've worked after the proposal was that we should work through this document, because you start seeing things if you look at a second. So I have done that. There's a number of drafting issues that I've picked up. Not serious, but it is, for instance, in our principal act, the word auditor is not alphabetically, but when we do our bill, we do it alphabetically. So we need to fix that. Now, I don't know if those types of things the committee wants me to it out now, or if I say something, you have to the standard advisor and he fixes it for us.
Totally reliant and full confidence in you, secular advisor. Full confidence advocate, law. I'm sure we can rely on that. We're just going through now. Okay? Right. Once again, one, A, B, C. D on page four. Hang on. A, B, C, page four. And then we have another A. Well, of course, that's that in green, B, C. Now, I'm just conferring with my committee secretary. I don't think I need to read the thing, you see. That is the point. I only need to read the black, I can put it that way. And what is so green, the red on here, am I right? That have, we have retained, but not the green.
The green should, but ideally, the green should be black.
Yes, that's the
idea. So, if you see green, please tell your brain your green is black.
Yeah.
And in fact, any color at this point in time can be regarded as black.
Yes. My only problem here is when we say C, then we start again A, B, C. Do you follow what I'm saying? So there is, so just so that there is no confusion, is there? Right. And D. Because we've now got to be part each floor. No, many of us are now getting our, doing our internship here, studying articles. D, E, X. Page 5. G, H, I, J. Window number 1 end. 6. Page 6. J, under J, of course, you've got A, B, C, page 7, D, E, F, G. These, I think, appear to be principles. 8, K, M. Yes, Mr. Adorn.
Dr. I'm sorry about that. There is a B on page 6, which we wanted to align with the what we've written now in the main body of the law. It talks to the democratic member control. If you look at the Roman 3 there,
mm-hmm.
It's equal voting rights in primary cooperatives. And then we can see there that we've got one person, one member, one vote, which means one member, one vote. That would be category A and B. So we need some qualifier there. One member was applicable to category primary cooperative A and B, as well as also the other one, which we will follow now, which is 4, Roman 4 there, which says a democratic, and then a democratic organization for voting in secondary. The first one will have to be in primary cooperative C, which is the category C primary cooperative, because it was given a right to do those differentiated voting rights, plus tertiary, because the tertiary is not included there, so we include it. And then we also change the way of cooperative APEC organization to be in line with the main body to say the national APEC cooperative. So we clean it, just be cleaning it. Yes.
I know I indicated to members that the Deputy Minister would only be with us a short while. She has another engagement now. But thank you for being here. You certainly added value to our engagements and deliberations. Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm still on page 5. I might not have been here when this thing was finalized, but I think that it is done that under the subsection K, cooperative principles, and then the numbering will start now from A again. Can't we put a different numbering?
Yes,
I think, when we look at working with an amendment bill, we have a little bit of confusion within the text. The J that I'm looking at is clause J.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to look at. The A that is contained within clause J is section 1, definition of cooperative principles.
I raised that, you know, we're not now seeing you go back to A, B, C. But in fact, if you, during some time, so there was a principal act, all of us will be able to slot it in. But this is why we've said to a state law advisor as well, please, this is where it becomes critically important to ensure that numbering is absolutely correct. If we're unable, as we said, we can only look at the substantive issue and not the consequential numbering. That's part of the problem. And that is why we get the printed version, am I right, back again, formally adopted. Yeah. So it is a bit difficult at the moment. So I think if we can focus in the one issue which you've already raised, Mr. Jevon Dormore, on page 6, which I know will mean it was a consequence of what has recently been done. That is the issue, you know. Now you have to go back and correct the beginning in order to ensure that it is in line. Page 6, C, Roman I, 2, 3. Page 7.
Madam Chair, sorry. I'm sorry, I'd just like to return to page 5 on the community development definition. I would just like to ask if, I raised it before, where it takes a mean set of values and practices which aid to combat poverty, which is fine, assist historical disadvantage in white communities. Is it an exclusive clause? Does it exclude, will it imply that they will be excluding anybody else from community development if they are not historically disadvantaged?
I hear what you're saying. The way I understood it is that poverty, if you were not, perhaps, let's take it from where you left off, if you were not historically, so to speak, disadvantaged, but you were poor, you would be included. And I understand it. So I'm not historically disadvantaged, as far as I can recall. A section of my family may be, not me. And then, but if I suddenly fell on hard times or my grandchildren, they would be poor. And I understand, and I'm looking at yourself, the chief director, poor would then cover that.
We engaged with this earlier, and we also stipulated very clear that if you look at, before you even talk, assist historical disadvantage, we say combat poverty. So combat poverty includes all those people that are poor who find themselves in situations of poverty. So in that particular regard, it's all inclusive. And then the other one just becomes a qualifier for a specific group of people who were, by historical reason, happens to be in that situation. So it must be read in totality rather than exclusion. Okay, then.
Madam Chair, yes, thank you very much. That explains it.
Thank you very much. We did have a lot of discussion on that particular issue, in fact. We're living on 7, D, autonomy and independence, E, education, training and information, F, cooperation among cooperatives, G, concerns community. Page 8. Financial, page 8. The substitution for definition of financial services cooperative of the following definition. H-I-J-K-L. I couldn't read what that was to me. By the insertion of the definition financial services cooperative of the following definition. And then A, B, C, D, E. M. By the insertion of the after the definition of housing cooperative of the following definition. Independent review. Right. The only thing I found strange is that here there aren't any numbers, or, you know, whether they're Arabic, Roman, or anything. There's no numbering there under independent review. And I assume that that will be slotted in as we can end the moment.
That's what we're currently dealing with the definition section. And the definition section actually ideally should not have A's and B's and 1's and Q's and B's. But we're dealing with some very complex definitions, which makes this almost an exception to legislation where our definition section also has a lot of A's and B's. I think your other legislation that has is like a tax,
thought. So it's like, it's a very, because it's a complicated definition. We all accept that, yes. Page 9, we then have A, registered auditor, B, a person who is qualified to be appointed, and then juristic person, A, all juristic persons, B, trust, M, by the insertion after the definition of housing cooperative of the following definition, management decision report, page 10. This is still one, I hope people know. Page 10, O. By the insertion after the definition of the
Minister
of the Yes, I'm
on the for political taking of on page 9.
Yes.
Where we talked of the housing cooperative.
Yes.
I thought we had agreed to do away with it without taking, maybe I'm making a mistake, because we discussed it and when we were saying that the housing department, you know, they would be happy if it's here, but we then said, no, it's better if it's not here, just like this.
I think we raised all kinds of things. I said, why not have a VUC cooperative? Why not have the VUC cooperative?
Yes.
So that you go all of them now, manufacturing cooperative, or something else, you know. And by the time you finish, you've got 30 different little names. I don't know if any of our departments, perhaps.
In the main body, and we're coming to it, you will see, Jefferson, there were areas where the Department of Housing wanted some qualification of cooperatives within the housing legislation. That is what was removed. But the definition of housing cooperative, it's still there, it's not changed, it has not been tampered with. So that is where the difference is from what Honorable Member is saying. So that is in the main body. I know that it's part of, I will check the law and also point out very clearly on it. But it's not on the definition, because this one refers to specific law definition. We need to have the definition on what we mean by housing cooperatives written. It was not yet, nor even also discussed. It is as it exists within the main act. It was never kind of yes. Thank you, Chair.
Is everyone happy with that? Our only concern when we raised it at the time was that if you're going to have housing, it almost opens the door to other forms of wanting to say they bring things, this one, the next one, and the next one. But that was a concern that I have. I know we did discuss it when it all came up. So we're all sorted out. People are very pleased and happy to move on. Page 10. Of the following definition, natural apex cooperative. By the inserting substitution of the definition of primary cooperative of the following definition. We have another definition then for primary cooperative. We have A, B, and a C. Then we come back again to clause Q. By the insertion after the definition of primary cooperative of the following definition. Public Finance Management Act, R, by the substitution for the definition of social cooperative for the following, what a social cooperative is. And then S, by the insertion of the definition of social cooperative of the following. So you've got the social report as to what it means. T, by the definition, substitution for the definition of supervisory committee of the following. Definition of supervisory committee means X. The most one that we spent a lot of time on, U, by the substitution for the definition of surplus on page 11. You'll remember we went at length into that. 5, the substitution for the definition of tertiary cooperative of the following. And then a tertiary cooperative, what it means. W, by the insertion after the definition of this act, of the following definitions, tribunal, what it means, so quite clear. A, B, and then W, and then X on page 13. By substitution for the definition of worker cooperative of the following definition. That was also the subject much earlier on of a lot of discussion. Now, members,
move forward here? Are there any objections? Right, so we're moving forward on clause 2. Anyone can raise their hands, of course. Amendment of section. Yeah, the definition's put to bed, you know, and now forever hold your peace. So, let's move on. Amendment of Section 2 of Act 14, 2005. Clause 2. Section 2 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A. By the substitution for paragraph D of the following paragraph. D, to promote equity and greater participation, I recall that's taken up, isn't it? When it's brackets. In the formation of and management of cooperatives by persons from previously disadvantaged communities as determined by the Minister by notice in the Gazette. B, by the substitution of paragraphs F and G of the following paragraphs. F. Facilitation, the provision of support programs. And then, on page 14, the design and implementation of cooperative development programs. And I think, again, we tried to take all those out, you will recall, and make it very, very clear then that we were talking of provinces and other entities established for furthering the purpose. We took all the little ones out. Can you imagine if we create a new one or close down one? We have the amending legislation again. C, by the deletion of the word and. And under C, we've got, I can't read if that's an I or a J, permit the establishment of public enterprises. We've come very short, clause 2. We've moved there. Are there any objections? Anyone wishing to raise? Can we move forward?
Forward.
We all agree? Thank you. Amendment of Section 3 of Act 14 of 2005, Clause 3 of the Principal Act is thereby amended by A, page 15. And there we've got a cooperative must comply with cooperative principles. I think this is important. One we've been talking about all the time with their conflicts in the consumer tribunal, referred to in the Act, and is deemed to do so if. So it's mentioned quite a few times in the Act, and I think that's important. B, the substitution of 1 for paragraphs B and E of the following paragraphs respectively. B, in the case of A, and you've got category A and B, primary cooperatives. Remember this issue of how many votes you have, etc., and the numerical issues that were raised around this. We remember that long discussion. E, at least 5% percentage of the surplus is set aside, etc., as a reserve in accordance with the requirements of Section 46(1). Please read that because it's quite an important section, and members did refer to that. C, by the substitution of subsection 3 of the following subsection. 3. The constitution.
Yes. If I can just point out on subsection 3, we need to make a few consequential amendments based on the national edict. So we need tertiary, so we just need to move it around so tertiary is no longer deleted and we add the national edict. So that must still happen here.
Remember today, we looked at the section in which we cleaned that up towards the end.
Yes, but it is going to be happening throughout the whole process.
Yeah.
Therefore, we must just agree that wherever it exists, it must be cleared.
Yeah. And I think we'll refer to it again just on when it comes back to us, so that, you know, we can pick it up. Thank you very much. We then move to and then 3, and underneath that you'll see A, 3 members. No member has voting rights in excess of 40%. 4 members. I'm reading this out because it was a very serious point that came up at the time. No member has voting rights in excess So all this now is in agreement with the later amendments that have followed here, if you could just check on that. Six, all cooperatives must comply with the prescribed principles of governance. Seven, minister must publish the principles of, the, of governance.
Sure, in terms of the King Code is not an enforceable piece of legislation or law. But if we're talking about good governance, I'm not sure if there's any court case that has given a status to the King Code as such. So if you talk about good governance, would it automatically imply the King Code, or what would it imply exactly?
Well,
thank you.
If we can make it clear, it applies to various forms of good governance across the board, whether it's the public sector, the OECD terms of it, our terms of it, you know, it's a general term. I don't think it is specific to the King Code. It's not specific to that. But if members want felt that there are certain good governance principles that apply specifically to co-ops, that may be the reason you may add the co-op. Yes, Eisenson.
I think the intention is that there will be a separate, specialised set of good governance principles just for cooperatives. If you look at sub 7, the minister is going to publish these things, and they are going to be what the cooperatives have to comply with. But just to confuse the issue, you're right that the King Code is not generally directly legally enforceable law, but in principle it is not limited just to companies. It applies to absolutely every organisational structure that has democratic decision-making body. So it's everything from your local running club to every cooperative to everybody. So we'll just ignore the King Code and focus on this slightly more concrete set of cooperative specialized principles.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we agree with that. Okay. And then we go on to 8, on page 16. The cooperative must at all times conduct itself. You know, we went over this again today. And I mean, the way we ought to do this now, being in the cooperative, is the law, and it's been a collective issue here, is almost collectively get our brains together and running shoes, and I'm not sure if we should do a revolutionary song just to get people back on track. But there we are. Page 17. And here I thought, you were a social democrat. I must apologize. Page 17. 9. Yeah. You will recall that this was deleted. Do you remember? We've just done that. So now we need to come and adopt, not adopt per se, but move on this one of 3. Any objections here? Anything you wish to raise? Can we please move on clause 3? Thank you. Clause 4. Amendment of Section 4 of Act 14, 2005. Section. Clause 4. Section 4 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. And then you've got these issues of the national apex. By the insertion of subsection 1 of the paragraph D of the following paragraph. And then B. Page, okay, that is 4. Any objections to clause 4, the amendments there? Can we please move? I like the yes 5 of Act 14 of 2005. Section 5 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the deletion of subsection 2. Right. Any objections? Can we move, please? Good, I can see now you're all awake. Yeah, anyway. Amendment of Section 6 of Act 14, 2005. Section 6 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. We're talking here of the application to register a primary co-op. And who can do this? Yes, Honourable Kim Lewis?
Something that's just struck me is I hope it's not confusing that you need to satisfy all three of those Romans as the minimum. Is it not? Does it need to be all is into the day or?
Yes, no, I do think that first one, the five apple, the same domain?
No, it must be because they are talking to different tripping patterns that could be established. You see, you could, if you are a financial person, you can create a primary cooperative. If you are two juristic persons, you can create one. So it's all there. It's not just say all.
It's always all. It's like that rowing team in the Olympics. But, Ms. Ivanson.
I raised exactly the same point and also said we should have an all at the end of every subtool. And I was advised by the state drafting team that the convention in Parliament is only to put an all at the end of this penultimate subclause, so not to do it at the end of each clause. And apparently, the meaning of that is quite clear that these are all alternatives.
Well, this goes to show it wasn't all that clear. It's been raised. And we are working with legislation all the time. And it is not that clear. It's a convention. And I remember in 94 when we created the legislatures, etc., and our shared finance, we change all the laws and create our bank account. Tell state laws by saying, look, now we speak South African English. And by the way, we want some African English in our law that not only advocates and lawyers understand, but that we understand. And those who have to abide by law. If I don't understand the law, the magistrate says to me, ignorance is no excuse or something, and I can't start mumbling about an all. So, all I'm saying, there's no harm in it. Advocate Small, I need to know what you say.
Yes, Chair, thanks. I'm not too sure what to say. There's no harm in it. But that's how we happen to know it. That's how it's been done for many years. But the end of the all be the ultimate. I could let me all put it this way. I'm not going to commit myself. I'll refer to the office and I'll get back to the committee on that. And I'm sure if the committee insists that it should be there, then we can probably put it there.
I'm sure it can because there's no legal impediment. As I understand it, no legal impediment. And let's be, I think what we're doing here is we are developing a culture of legislation. Yes, thank you. Advocate Small?
Are we saying that we do that at every other board? We have come across the bowl. And do we also say that every end should be also inserted for that?
Really
put
an
orange
in the
I think, you know what concerns me? We sit here with legislation every day, especially this committee. We ourselves work here. Now, if we're sitting here every day, I would agree lawyers will probably have learnt conventions because they would have had to pass these laws, you know, I mean pass subjects at the university or something. But when you're coming to this, and you get given this, and then you say it's going to be a minimum of that and two, the first question someone will ask you, is it 5 and 2? Or is it 5 all? You know, it's a layman's understanding, and where possible, I do think we should make it accessible. I don't think we can all the time. I really don't, and I've seen that in finance and tax. But where we can, and I know what you're saying now, that's going to mean we're going to run through and have to do it throughout this legislation. on a computer, which you just click a button, and then, you know, it just throws it to you. But anyway, yes, but I'll come back to you at the end. Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable McIntosh.
Chair, at a different point, the...
And then I will take you.
Okay.
Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I agree with you. Look, in one of my lives, I was an English teacher, and so I don't like to have it in simple English. And there is, of course, another main A, in which you could say a minimum of each of 1, 2, 3. But I still think, and if you look at B and C, you have a minimum of 2 at primes, or a minimum of 2 or more. Now, it is confusing with that Roman, small Roman 1, small Roman 2, small Roman 3. But I think we must be very careful, Madam Chair. I agree with you, creating some sort of technical use of English, which is marked good syntax in terms of But I, like Mr. Hadeva, I'm from a deep rural area, and I want to leave it to the experts, and I have complete confidence in this battery of artillery we have.
Well, it definitely is an artillery, but it reminded me, and I'm going to get fake Lord Vines to come and laugh, of the way people, even on local radio stations, can't use proper English in the same Intaglia, you know. Half the people don't even know Intaglia, I mean, but yes,
Well, I'm pleased that the committee's taken that position, because I would like to see the or at the end of every single subclause throughout the bill, and the same for the end, and I can't imagine why the committee should allow itself to be constrained by conventions that just don't work.
That's the sort of expert of the people, right? Is it on the same topic? And we'll just hold fire, hold your business. Advocates more. You are here as the stake, Lord Lyons, and we will respect that.
Yes, yeah, thanks. I just want to use an example of the typical conventions that we use. We don't use anymore the word shall, if as far as possible. So, but if the principal act, again, like we would keep referring to the principal act as the words in the principal act, if the principal act does speak of shall, even if it was in 2010, then we continue with shall, no matter if we don't want to use that as a change of wording. So, and we also need to look at the principal act again, and I will confer with my colleagues at the office, and if it's possible, we... The chair did say that it did make more sense, we will do it. But if it's 20 subs, I mean, to have all in each 20 of them, that's also probably why it doesn't get that way. But I will get back to my colleagues and to the PC later.
We're aiming for a Roman galley. Now, on the Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. If you read number one, it is an application to register a primary cooperative. But then A, B, and C don't refer to primary cooperatives only. They refer to secondary and tertiary cooperatives. So it seems that B and C don't refer to one.
Under B, you have your E coming out again, not under B, but cross. and in subsection 2 of AND. You can see how important these ANDs are. If
if you look at 1A, we talk of unwanted 10. If you look at 1A, Chairperson, we talk of unwanted 10. It should be, 1A, it should be a good practice if we could just maybe have a word that just define clearly what are these unwanted 10s, you see, so that we, just for the purpose of the user, be clear what is it, because it's all the returns in relation to all the documents that must be complied with, you see, your financial statements, what, all of these things, and then we put it in there so that it's very clear, both for the registrar as well as also for the properties, what we mean by these annual returns, because...
In page 19, all right, C1A, and under 1A, there's almost that last line, meeting and has submitted its annual return. All that is being requested is inaccessibility, meaning and clarity. Yes, Ms. Ironson?
See, my colleague, I'm just kind of typing in an amendment there, but I would have suggested that we insert a new definition of annual return, listing what documents would be as the case may be. And I think that's just a technical thing. It's not a...
Always looking at your self-advocate small as well, you know. Right. I think the question before us, committee, is that perhaps we should be going into definitions. Do we all agree here? Top row, front row, center. You know. Advocate at the verbal, I think then we're going to take a break, you know. Just another clause or two.
Thank you, Division. We can either do a definition for annual return, but I always think this is the only position where we mention that word. So in a day-to-day, perhaps we can simply refer to what we do have in our definition, which is annual report, audited report, independent review report. And simply put it in it because those are defined, and they include the financial statement, the management decision report, social report.
All the reports are noted there. Agreed. Definition. And then we're on page 20. Sorry, let me see. That was your page 20. We're nearly coming to the end. The proposed name for the cooperative and a request to reserve that name. Right. That was clause 6. So we're all agreed. Any objections? No. We move to 7. Number 7. Section 8 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. Two little amendments there. Any objections? Clause 7? No. We move at speed now. Amendment of Section 9, Act 14, 2005. Section 9 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. And we look at the person who originally entered into the contract ceases to be personally bound by it. And B, by the substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection 4. If a cooperative does not ratify the contract, the person who originally entered into the contract continues. Remember that discussion? To be personally bound by the contract. If the contract has cooperative has not ratified it, you can't just say, no, it's all agreed. It's got to be ratified. Right. See by the insertion of subsection follow on page 21. And that is 5. This is all the contract, and we spent a long time on this, as you know. 6, 7, and the liabilities came up. Remember all of that, very important there on 7, 8. Where a cooperative receives written notification of the existence of a pre-incorporation contract and does not expressly ratify it, ratify or reject the pre-incorporation contract by way of a resolution within 3 months of the date of receipt of the written notification, the cooperative will be deemed to have ratified that they haven't responded in writing within 3 months. Remember, we looked at all of that. Very important. So can we then agree to clause 8 in objections? No. And we then move on to clause 9. We're going to stop at clause 10 today, take a little breather, stretch our legs. Amendment of section 10 of Act 14, 2005.
Yeah. And one of the complaints was that we were never in
order.
We never in order. So, I think I'm going to say something that the Commission committee is that my
Yeah.
Can I just ask, is any other organization in the enterprise that you've used LTE?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we need to come to that, we need to do that.
Yeah,
we're going to do
that. Yeah.
So I thought I'd make an advice. Stop the mask,
the bank there, he's kind of going to want to know very clearly whether it's LTE or not.
There's a
trial
that says no one else is allowed to use the LTE.
What's the purpose of the sitting today?
Yeah, that's right.
So we started three.
Yeah. I think we could have been the last campaign ran before one room.
Now listen to those questions.
You'll see which NCMP is applauding and which ones are disappointing.
No, we'll not show that.
Everybody will be applauding because they'll be hitting the base on both sides.
Yeah.
Taking their time, responding slowly, but making a point. The difference is that the president sometimes takes his train. This was not the deputy devil for anyone. Even if you have been aggressive, you will just come off and continue to put his point home. But if I was asked, I would have certainly not retained them for another person. That's what they are now.
So I think that will be the case.
Well, it's not a given.
No, it's not a given.
Down on the ground, people are still nominating.
No.
So in this time, the AC has decided to say no one of such branches must nominate. Only the branches.
Yeah.
On the ground.
Yeah.
But you can't do the understanding. So, the regions, the provinces, the NDC, they have got no say as to who are the names that are going to come into the box. They will not even have a say around how it must go on. So you give it to the IEC, independent electoral, whatever, and they govern the room.
So when do they meet the parliament?
Yeah, well, the room, they include every day how many names can you take. For instance, you'll find, let me give you an example, you will find that we need 60 people in the electoral executive, excluding the top. But you'll have 2,000 names, or 3,000 names, people who want to vote. And you come back on stage and pull them a vote from the list. How do you buy? What is there? You do a cut of points. Maybe 200. I agree the nominations will give them. We'll make them number one, number two, number three, number four, number
five. How do you choose now?
No, look, you have say over 300 branches that are nominating. Somebody will have 200.
Don't have it.
suggesting that the B to R will simply take half an hour. So we are going to deal with that right now. And I hope Honourable Hill Lewis could come back because that's a report that he needs to engage on. Right. Now where is it?
Can I make a suggestion to you? Relating to the bit. That because once it is drafted into a bill or in a law form, we still have got to go through it clause by clause.
Yes, yes, we're not talking about the co-op, sir.
Well, I was trying to say, why don't we send it to the drafters to go and make it into the formation of law, as it is, and then we will go through it clause by clause.
We don't have the time, that's the problem. That's how we time is against us if you look at our program, you see. And in view of what the chair of chairs, Honourable Foley, has indicated, if it means we start at 6 in the morning, we'll start at 6 and finish at 9. I'm trying to obviate that challenge, you see, that we're having. We need basically another 5 hours. And, you know, it is a problem for us at the moment. Because we've only given that information yesterday. So I want to leave the co-op. I really do, and I want us to get on to the B to R. And I want you to pick up your clean copy. And I will alert you. Please, Honourable Member,
unfortunately, you are not responding to what I'm being said.
But
we're responding to something else.
No, you are asking me, I heard you, if it is possible for us to send it back to the drafters and let them put it back into legislation as it stands. It is exactly where it should be before it's made to the printers. It is. That's where we are. That is our challenge. It's apart from that one area that, there was something that was raised towards the end, and they said that the succession is, remember. But we need to send it to the printers on Friday. That is our problem. See? Thank you. So I did hear what you had to say, Honourable Salah. If we had more time, that's the way we should go. And I apologize if I, you know, created the impression I wasn't listening, I was. The B-triple-R, if you pick up your latest version, which looks extremely clean, but nevertheless says draft, I will alert you to what was changed since you last looked at it. On page 1, the first paragraph simply has 1, 2, 3 lines, which says, against its mandate and targeted profiles and priorities of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, manufacturing, etc., submits its report. Those are 3 additional lines. Then you go to page 2. And on page 2, under the role of a committee, second line, you'll see as an integral part of its oversight role. Addition. Go to the next paragraph, first line. B-triple-R process enables the committee to exercise its legislative responsibility. To the bottom of the page, last 2 lines, in terms of the Act, the DTI also administers ANDIA. And then turning to the last, we said 14, and I keep on saying it was 15 agencies at the time the allocations were made. Now that must be cleaned up. It must be, because that was what was allocated. Okay, this one here, 15. And then you put the 15 in, which you've done, and please, I think it's somewhere here. Here it is. With a
advice. I have made some comments, but as I understand it, there is a sense in which a report like this is almost technical, in that, and I'm quoting, it says, the role of the committee of the Moneyball Act, it must annually assess the performance, and then the committee must submit a report. And the overarching purpose is for the committee to make recommendations on the forward use of resources to address the implementation of policy priorities and services of the department. So, in a technical sense, it's saying, has the department used its money? It's not meant to be a kind of political debate about the policy of the department, although one could possibly mention that if necessary. But that is what happens when we have a debate on the budget. I'm speaking now as an opposition MP. So I think one needs to consider whether one is going to be in a sense a technical position, or whether one feels one does need to mention certain things which are important in terms of the committee. Take for example, and I'm just using this as an example, foreign trade, foreign direct investment. To me, that's a fundamental concern of this committee and this ministry, and therefore the reports, for example, and Advocate Albert, I think, highlighted in some radio report, that the government is seeking to reduce an element where you indemnify foreign investors against expropriation or national. Now, I haven't been able to get that clearly set up, but does one then mention that in this report, or would it be regarded as completely incorrect because this is simply a technical report? And I just want that guidance. Obviously, as an opposition politician all my life, I like to take a gap whenever it presents itself. But at the same time, one wants to respect the procedure of the purpose of a PRR.
The fact that we're coming out of Parliament is not the AG's report, but we're commenting on the AG's report. The mere fact that we comment on the AG's report is a political matter. But I do know where you're coming from. I think we're trying to look at, is this, we have a budget at the beginning, we then comment on what has been allocated there, on the policy implications. The whole issue is, at that point, there is a strategic plan. And in that strategic plan, which we either agree with or we don't agree with at that point, you will see we raise a number of issues then, and we were given certain assurances. If you like, it's to take the IPC. Certain assurances were put here. The members had dealt with that in depth as the challenges there. Now we look in that to see what was committed and allocations and the targets that they identified. Did they comply? Did they actually meet that? Or, as it turns out now, were these all unrealistic? And in that sense, no, it is not entirely technical at all. You may have the view that it was totally unrealistic here. We may have a view, say, another party, that, well, not really. You know what I mean? In that sense, you're giving an opinion that's not going to be an Auditor General's opinion, per se. So I don't want to create the impression that this is a technical report per se. Otherwise, we would leave it entirely to staff to do and say goodbye, you know. So if we understand each other correctly, please, if you think that one of the targets indicated last year and coming up, you know, with the budget, if that was one of them and they haven't met it, then do say so. This was said then, this was indicated then, it was not achieved. And I think that's what we're looking at, per se. Remember, just on that note, if we look at page 4, there was quite, we actually raised quite a few issues here under measurable objectives. Do you remember at the time when we first looked at this, some of you? That was rewritten while retaining the substance, to reflect exactly what the issues are. So you need to read to ensure that that in fact reflects our discussions 2.2. Those discussions in something continues. And remember, after all of this, you need a committee opinion. Who put the committee opinion in? I did. That means you have to either agree or throw it out. Do you want because it's not something you actually crafted there. Significantly, at the top of page 6, in this international year of cooperatives, X, Y, Z. Okay? Now, it says here, the committee is of the view that it will create that of co-op, an enabling environment for the development of cooperatives, and emphasize the need to differentiate between SMEs and cooperatives as two separate types of business entities requiring different forms of support. Right. We then move, and the next red that we have here, sorry, is page 13. The same point is made, which we made clear during this year, that we don't want SMEs and cooperatives in the same heading, that we consider them to be separate form animals, as it were. So that separated it, and you'll see there that the cooperatives there, which appear to, I think, reflect the position we made over and over again, remembering that the Cooperative Act is an amendment act. We've always had co-ops. The critical one here, of course, on page 13, is international relations. And you may wish now to really focus on that one, you know, where the whole thing was changed, international trade relations. And I think in view of what you've just said there on the Macintosh, you may want to just read that carefully. That was also, you made a reference to Honourable Elvis, although he can raise it in his own right. But the issue of the WTO has been brought in, the issues of our economic interests, in passing the customs union, we'll be taking that BRICS, IPSA, position with the United States and Europe, you know, who, how is this governed? That is what they said they were going to do, and we could ask ourselves, why haven't they? Why haven't they all been passed? Is it a DTI's fault? You know, what is the position there? The customs union, etc. So if you think that that is a clear reflection of the targets, etc., then that's fine. But I see your hand, Honourable
McIntosh. No, Madam Chair, look, my concern is we want to try to keep this as short as possible. One could bring in under international trade relations, you know, something like a BOA, but I think that would just make it unnecessary. There is a mention of international trade, the European Union and United States. And so, I'm just trying to be sensitive and constructive rather than just making unnecessary points. I think under foreign direct investment, the issue which identifying investors, like South African investors in Zimbabwe are indemnified. So, I mean, it's common practice around the world, but it is a bit worrying if one hears a report which may be unsubstantiated and nonsense that our government is considering reducing or removing those.
The other thing is, we have to, this is why the report takes so long, we have to verify everything. Now, I've gone back to all our documents, and that is why it took me so long, because it wasn't a matter of just this annual report, but our engagements throughout the year and what the budget said at the beginning. What was the commitments made by DTI? And nowhere did this really come up per se. So, short of now, I don't even know the time difference in China and South Africa, which is where the minister is. but I think it's wrong of me to be frivolous about it. It's a very serious matter. But, regrettably, it's going to be very difficult for us to confirm and get out of the way before 1 o'clock.
No, I don't want to make an ease of it. I really don't.
And apart from this, I'm embarrassed to make an ease of it if I haven't, you know, done a lot of the homework. I simply haven't studied this report as well as I should have done. I just skimmed it through and picked up a few points.
You had a valid point and you'll take into account. Honourable Kanebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of international trade relations, I think that it's good that it was legally substantive now than before, simply because we tend to forget that trade is part of the mandate of the department. You know. But I think that from the issues which are raised here, they've covered other aspects, because our traditional trade partners, Europe and America, are still covered. Even our new partners, as we move forward, even the covered institutions like the WTO, which regulate the framework of trade around the world, is covered. So I think we can pass this part. I think it's good. I don't know whether the other members.
But I
do
commit ourselves through the secretariat to providing the information that was raised here. Okay, we will provide that next week to members. Then we move on to page 15, and that is regulation. Now look, these were really, on the 15, the regulation, it was really a question of how do we word it more than the 16 now, I see. How do we word it? And really the whole thing is what happens to the intellectual property at the time that we close the annual report. Not now, you know, at that time. And of course at that time it had not been assented to, and we didn't quite know where it was. And then the other acts were adopted and assented to, and this is what they led to. So that's really the issue there. Then we move on to page, where is it? Is it 21 as well achieved? Did you check on that? Yes, okay. Here we are, page 23. Page 23, after the last bullet, just above the National Consumer Commission. Again, that's a comment I crafted, so you need to look at it and say, do we agree? Focus at some length on the NES because of the strategic role it plays both financially and in terms of its partnership development and value add, and welcomes their vigorous approach to transforming the economic landscape. Do you, don't you agree? Then we come to page 27.
So can I just get back to 19?
Yes.
To get them to
to source their stuff in the country, and I gather Patel, Mr. Patel, is talking to them and so on. But I don't know whether in a thing like this you actually mention an individual investor. Or do we presume that when we say the multinationals establish their productive activity in the world, we assume that it's obviously part of Walmart, who's probably one of the biggest in the world?
Yes. But I mean, you know, we do have a lot, a few others that are billions, multi-billion operations. But not that that should discourage the input. But I think on the FDI, I'm going to allow on what Albert just occurred off here. If you were thinking of crafting something, you know, some of your ideas, you may wish, I think I've often said this term, if I craft something, craft a sentence we may be able to consider now at this meeting. Could you do that? Meanwhile, I'll hear from Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to add on to what Honourable McIntosh has said is that we asked some questions regarding labelling before and also wanted to receive guidance from the Minister as to the principles, international principles applied, and whether this will be applied to all self-governing territories that are not recognized as states yet, or if they are recognized as states, on what basis. And we have had no reply from the department on that question. So this relates to other countries like Tibet, that's an occupied territory by China, etc., etc. And we need to have clarity from government in terms of its trade policy, when and how it will apply labeling going forward in the future. Thank you very much.
I'm very sorry you weren't in the committee at the time when we did engage the Minister and subsequently the DG and Chief Director in this regard. And it was a question which may have been raised by you, but was also raised by the Honourable Ambrosini as well. And at the time, I remember him saying to me in my office how transparent the Minister had been. And, you know, that coming from him really put a stamp on it, on things. But, and he made that clear. But I think he was referring to our engagement in which the Minister spoke about a principled approach to the matter, and that the South Africa has got a one China policy. He made that clear in his statement. And then it was reiterated again at a subsequent meeting. But with it, I think you may have been there when we had the public hearings. I'm not sure. Were you there at the public hearings with the Oka Shahuda and the two Jewish organizations? Were you there on the Wellness?
No, I wasn't there.
Okay. Well, you know, look, that, we went into detail in that area. They had the opportunity, and in fact, we subsequently got a note from them thanking us for the constructive approach. They had now a better understanding of those principles. It didn't mean to say they agreed. You know, there's a big difference, I think. And what came out then was that the Minister subsequently wrote back. And at that meeting of public hearing, the Chief Director indicated publicly, and we just sent out a press, statement, that after there would be a final notice published, and then that was after the public hearing. And then people would have 30 days from that final notice. I subsequently got correspondence just confirming that position. And yes, perhaps it does sound a bit odd in that it looks of two final notices. That final notice that was referred to in committee, that would happen, and it happened on the 15th or something, whatever, or 10th. From the 10th of October, that's this month, there are 30 days for people to put their comments in, and I happen to know that all three are once again sending further submissions. And after that, a final, if one could put that way, is going to be taken. That will be gazetted. So what you got out now is a final notice of 30 days, the one that people thought they had 4 months ago. And with respect to the international, okay, the foreign policy, etc., in this regard, the Minister made it absolutely clear that the position of South Africa as a country was in and then in line with that, we would adopt and work within international protocols and guidelines. Now, I can add nothing more than that. And he then indicated one or two other countries that had either done that or were bent on pursuing that route. But I think that this is the subject for another, what do you call it, thing. It also is not something that occurred before the end of March, if I can put it that way, which of this year, which is the period covered by the annual report. So given that it's not, it may sound to you like a technical way out, but that is the reality, and that's why we had to even say that about the IE. We couldn't give them, well, I now got a letter back from the president, you know. So I hope that helps. But Honourable James had asked me the other day just to confirm if we're doing GMOs or something. Do you remember that one on the no labelling? And I confirmed that that is coming here. And that issue can be taken up again there, just to let you know it is on the programme. And I think if you get alert to that, Honourable Albert, you'll be able to make a very good input in that area. So, on foreign direct investment, I was hoping you were coming forth with that one or two sentences, Honourable McIntosh, for the committee to look at. Remember, are you coming with it?
No, I'm not going to take it up. I think we'll make as much too clumsy as I think it's inherent in what's said.
Okay. But these things can be seen in what you call the debate. 27. On 27, at the end of key issues, you again have an opinion of the committee. It is important to study this. I don't need people saying in the house, she drafted it, hell, I didn't even see it. Now, the committee is of the opinion that cooperative governance principles should be strengthened between the NCD and its public sector partners and other commissions, in particular the Consumer Tribunal. Systems should be robust and financial management requirements should be complied with in terms of the PFMA to enhance the positive work done for consumers to protect their rights. And then we have another input that was made on page 31. And yours is also coming up just now, the input you made, Honourable McIntosh. What page was that, 33? Okay. But 31 at the moment, page 31. In the second paragraph at the top, the committee expressed its concern, this must have been with the NRCS, expressed its concern that good governance had broken down, in some cases irretrievably, with senior managers having to be replaced, in particular the CEO, the CFO, and the suspension of the acting chairperson. You know, and I think that's what was alerting us to all these sufficient principles that we are on. However, the committee welcomes the appointment of another acting chairperson. You see, when it started off, it was an acting. And we weren't sure how many actors were on board. So we had to revise our program. Another acting chairperson, as well as the measures taken by the DTI to address good governance issues. This was to immediately arrest the deterioration in the supply chain management process that had compromised tenders, which impacted negatively on the resources available for the NRCS work. Okay? And then we have your input there from COPE, is it? What's that? 32. Okay, page 32. We have another bit, but it just prefaces what you added there. It's in the, from the bottom, it's just above the National Credit Regulator, and that paragraph starts with the committee welcomed the stability that the CEO had restored and the steady progress in the CIPC achievement. Apparently, it's not a CEO, it's a commissioner of the CIPC. So it's not a CEO. Yeah. However, the commissioner pointed out, the next one, the commissioner pointed out the challenges in the call center, which impacted negatively on the work of the CIPC. The committee has noted with concern. Where is the stuff I gave you?
Sorry, Madam Chair, I did mention that here on page 33, and then I said the same thing, and I don't want to have Mr. Gilmour telling me that I'm guilty of a tautology again on page 35, but in a sense, if anything is our committee stuff, it's part four. I mean, that's our conclusions and recommendations. Madam Chair, I don't want to go again. I think we've raised it before the Banking Council and everybody. My concern is that if you're a pro-poor government and department, then I think we've got to accept that there is a, well, I mean, if you want to be pejorative, a bottom feeders in the whole loan shark world, as it were. But for many people, they're not going to come into every kind of FICA requirement. So they will go and borrow money from the retired teacher around the corner and so on. And that, I just think we should try to bring these people into the net. And therefore, we may need to be flexible with FICA. I don't want to hammer it anymore. I did mention in 33 and then again in our recommendations under 10.7. I do think we should mention it somewhere.
I want to be clear. You're suggesting in some way we not mention FICA, etc. Although, as you yourself have noted, to some extent it is already captured under 35. Am I correct in your understanding?
I think so. I think one could scrap that for that one.
Yeah, that's the one on 33.
Rather than even 35, because in the sense that our own committees. If obviously, Madam Chair, committees have to be with it.
But we have, as you noted, on 35, we added a 10.7, the Honourable Member Feed Act there. We've added a point, one aspect. Do we all see that there? Should we just turn off that mic, Honourable Member?
Oh, my apologies.
And now I need some guidance here. There was, we revised some of this. No, more recently this was revised. Okay. And I just want to check here now. We're all on board because you see we're now coming to the conclusions you see apart from that last. And we move the one conclusion, you see, which to recommendations. And you moved it back again. I'm going to just check this with the whip that's assisting with some of these things. Something done at tea break, and I do not want to take us off in the wrong direction. We've now got it quite clear, thank you. So, one of the conclusions had been moved to the recommend. No, initially it was there, wasn't it? No, it wasn't. Okay. One of the recommendations you see printed on 35, that is deep, has now become a conclusion. And that is going to be 10.8. I hope I'm correct. Does everyone see that? 10.8. And it should read, and you can read it, Mr. Hermans, because I can't see your read as it's too small.
10.8.
What was 35 under 12G, a D, is now going to become under conclusion 10.8. But there are some changes to what you see. So So there were no deletions.
No.
Okay. I'm now reliably informed that the entire D becomes 10.8, the last conclusion. Okay. Think our recommendations are. Informed by its deliberations, the committee recommends that the House request Act A. The department should address the weaknesses identified in the Auditor General's report with respect to the DCI as entities, in particular IT challenges with respect to the CRPC. B. States here. The National Credit Act should be reviewed to ensure compliance of lending institutions with the Act and to ensure the protection of vulnerable consumers against unscrupulous lending practices. Now, the new C, which you don't have, you don't actually have this, if I'm correct. It's similar to what you had, but it's so changed, you know, recrafted, that and we've had to take cognizance of conventions as well. So we pursued that line. The committee regrets that it has been unable to provide effective oversight over all the entities that fall within its mandate. The committee recommends that in the light of this, the committee be classified as a Group C committee, in brackets, priority committee, to ensure it has sufficient committee time to fulfill its mandate. For those who may not be aware what a Group C is, we were a Group C in the first year. It's a so-called opportunity in which your members, like finance, who's at SCOPA, etc., that is the priority committee. And you don't find those same members in some of the parties then serving as full members on two and three committees. Of course, the political parties all have their own interpretation of that. So it's not meant to be overtake the, you know, the smaller parties who have no choice. But it does affect anyone who's got more than eight members, shall we say. All right. So that is the difference there. And that's it then. Those are your recommendations. I think the last C. Before we come back. The conclusion there, I think, is quite a sound conclusion. And that we commend them for taking progress, but at the same time we acknowledge it has a long way to go. Do you follow? We're not saying that we're at anywhere near the end of the journey. On that particular note, Dr. James, Honourable James?
Just under recommendation C, I think there's a mistake there. Third line, the deal mandate of trade and institutionally. Not trade in industrial relations.
I think that for those who've not always been with trade and industry, the report used to be nearly 60 pages, this sort of report, and the budget report. We were moving towards, you know, 100 pages. More recently, the budget reports we have are down to 25, 27, and this report from previous years has also been cut. So there is an attempt, but we are required to conform and comply with Parliament's requirements in terms of the EOR process, and we need to make that clear. The second thing is, normally, as you've seen in other years, you've seen, oh, we knew it again and said, but we haven't yet decided, should we ask for money, shouldn't we ask for money, you know, we're still finding our feet, and last year we're still, but this year it wasn't a question of finding our feet. We took a conscious decision, you will recall at the beginning, to say, we need to be cognizant of the economic environment, both internally and externally. You know, before we just begin to recommend more funding, we're also not aware of what will come out from the medium term budget policy statement, and we wouldn't want to inhibit this, but there has to be, and I'm sure you'll say this in your debate, there has to be measures, creative measures, in which the department is able to manage its budget and in that way continue to address its priority mandate. Having said that, I'd like to thank all of you for working extremely hard. I'd like to thank the staff who worked very hard. I also, in particular, he's not here. I have for some time complained about the researcher and his work. And I must say, really, his performance in the last 6 months or so with respect to the work that has been turned out is really a significant improvement. And his work is now of value to this committee. I'm sorry he's not here to hear that, but that we really do appreciate that. So having said that, and also Vito making sure we have all our photo stats, etc., even though you're working with half a machine or something, can we please have somebody to propose the adoption of this BRRR report, of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, dated the 24th October 2012. Thank you, Honourable Demi. Yes?
President, I propose the adoption of this report.
Honourable McIntosh?
I second the adoption of this report.
I'd like to thank all members of the committee on that note. And simply to address one or two administrative issues now to do with our program. We got a letter from, or I got a letter from Mr. Crowe yesterday in the House, notwithstanding that it was based on the 9th. And urging us to complete all legislation, we said it's enough, by the, you know, here it is, isn't it? No, it's DTI. By the 1st of November, and I've already mentioned that to you, but also with respect to the, what do you call it, other work that we've got on our Facebook, are all of these reports should be on the ATC, I think it's on Thursday or something, by Wednesday or Thursday, today, this afternoon, by 2 o'clock. So there's that deadline. And that the budget debate, the legislation debate, they have to be processed between the 6th and the 8th. I hope people are hearing that, the debate. Our workforce ascertain harsh time. And that is the co-op that Honourable Salah was referring to just now, you know, that we needed to certainly make speed with that. The problem is, we need to get it printed. After the first print, it's got to be edited. It's got to be proofread. And that is going to take a full day. And that's where the problem is. And after that full day changes, we're looking at a four-day process after we have finished with it. That does not include the weekend. So after Friday will take us to when? The 2nd? Yes. Now I'm saying this because we need a full house, you know, full team, to pass that legislation at 5 o'clock on the 1st of November. If we don't do that, we will have missed the deadline and go to next year. I'm appealing to all of us, and I know some of you have got very, very serious commitments, but we won't retain you. We need to adopt it. It then is going to the House on the 2 days I've already indicated, one of those, and we've already said it would be the 8th, which is a Thursday. Now, I'm telling you that now. We hope we'll get an hour. The way things are going, Honourable Hadeli will be making it earnest appeal in that regard. I don't think we can allocate half an hour to this. It would make a mockery of a serious piece of legislation. So, in terms of tomorrow, please don't forget, we've got the 25th of October, a joint briefing with committees in the economic cluster on the annual report of ICAP. And that is occurring at 4:30 to 20:00 On the Friday, 26th, you've got the engagement with the National Credit Regulator, which, and the bill. And that's why I say, please, we've got to actually adopt that bill. And then the 30th, okay. So it's an appeal. The ICAP program is here. We are sending out invites to all of the committees in the economic cluster who may wish to join us, some of their members in this particular area. And I think that unless Mr. Hermans has got anything to add on an admin level, we're happy as well. Okay, so and in terms of our technical support staff for the co-ops, you've seen and heard the deadline that we're facing in this regard. They're not going to be extended. So we'd like to thank all of you in this regard, on the support staff, the technical and expert support staff, and the members of the committee for being here so that we can finish early at 20 to 1. Thank you very much. The meeting's adjourned until tomorrow.